on the Pesach side. So we're going to deal with the Shmuel first, and then we'll use the remaining time that we have for the Pesach side. So we were in chapter 25. We're up to sentence 12. And this is a really perplexing moment in David's story. And I was hoping that what we would do is again, you know, take a few minutes to deal with this before we get around to Pesach. So we know the story at this point. We know that David's men have been taking care of Nabal's men in this area of Midbar Paran through the season with the animals. We know that there's now a sheep shearing, and David comes to Nabal, or he sends men to Nabal, a delegation seeking his support, saying, it's a holiday, you're already preparing for people anyway, and in addition, my men really deserve it, they're like your shepherds. And Nabal gives him this really impossibly rude response. And when you really think about it, he could have just said, I only want this for my men. He could have just said, your men don't deserve it, they're not my shepherds, I didn't hire them. He could have done that. But he does this personal element to it. He makes it personal to David, unnecessarily, by saying, you know, all these people, these upstarts who claim to be king, like, that had nothing to do with anything. It wasn't what David's request was about. David didn't say to him, I am now king and therefore you should support me. So that really supports, number one, the fact that Nabal is a bad guy. And number two, it supports the Yerushalmi that says that really Nabal's antagonism towards David is because Nabal thinks I should be the next king. I am part of this royal line from the house of Peretz. I have the best lineage of anyone on that line. You know, it that feeds into it. The fact that, you know, they say that you know, when you're talking to somebody and they say something that's completely irrelevant, that's where their mind is. That's really what it was all about for them in the first place. What Nabal's irrelevancy sheds a lot of light on what's going on in his head. So David's reaction, though, is where we're going today. In Pasuk Yud Gimel, we're told that David's men, having returned, right, Vayashuvu, Vayabo, Vayagidulo, they returned and they came to David and they told him, Vayomer David la anashav, and David said to his men, Chigru ish es charbo, gird up your swords. Vayachgiru ish es charbo, and they all did, and as we read last week, Vayachgor gam David es charbo, David girds his own sword. Vayalu achrei David, and they go after David, 400 men, like we talked about last week, with 200 guarding the Kelim, we talked about that as well. And the question that I wanted to explore in our Shmuel segment of the Shir today is this reaction really worthy of David? Especially when, as we said last time, at the end of the day, Nabal owes David nothing. So I'm going to show you two approaches. When I say he owes him nothing, I mean from a legal perspective. He owes David nothing. I'm not talking about from a moral perspective. So, two approaches. First approach is that this is an act of Beis Din. It is a legal act to punish a Morei B'Malchus, somebody who is rebelling against the throne. And here I want to note something. On the one hand, we keep saying David isn't really acting as king, David isn't really acting as king. But this is the first time that we get a real description of David interacting with civilians. You know? I think we may have noted that last time also. We did have David talking to his own men when they wanted to attack Shaul. And we've had David dealing with Yehonasan. But this is his interaction with civilians. It's the first time that we're seeing that recorded. And maybe this is actually, you know, the kind of force that characterizes his reign. Maybe that's really the case. Either way, whether that is or is not, the argument would be that what he's doing here is claiming I am king and they are Nabal is a rebel against the throne. If you take a look at source number one, I did quote this last time, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, I'm not going to read it aloud this time because we did do it last time, but the Gemara in Sanhedrin that says that when judges hear a capital case, you have the judges give their input starting with the least of the judges, and they quote our text here because it says that David girds his sword last. What is the charge against Nabal? Why should he be up on a capital charges? It's called Morei B'Malchus, rebellion against the throne. Take a look at source number two, please, where you see Radak. He says, Ubedin Fashos Dan Oso Im Chave Rav. David and his associates judged him, Nabal, for capital punishment. V'hiskimu ki Morei B'Malchus Haya. They agreed, he was a rebel against the throne. V'chayav Misa is liable for death. Because everybody knew that David was anointed as king. And Nabal scorned him. He mocked him. He called him an eved. He called him a slave. There are other examples of this in Tanakh in which humiliation of a king or of a king's proxies is considered an act of war against the throne. I'm going to show you two cases that are less clear, which we have already seen, and then I'm going to show you two cases that are more clear. And source number three, I gave these to you as bullet points. The first one, remember Nachash and Yabesh Gilad, right after Shaul became king, so Nachash of Ammon threatens to knock out the right eye of all the men of Yabesh Gilad, and that is grounds for Shaul coming to war against him. Of course, it's also to defend Yabesh Gilad. I say this is less clear because it's not so clear that it's characterized as a rebellion against Shaul or a mockery of Shaul. It's not as clear cut in that case. The second case, it's clear that it's mockery, is when Shaul was anointed as king. When he was declared publicly as king by Shmuel, and there are people who say, Ma Yoshienu Zeh, how can this one save us? And then after he beats Ammon, then you have that line that I referenced here in Shmuel, Aleph, Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Yud Beis, chapter 11, sentence 12. They say, hey, who is it who said Shaul can't be king? Let's kill them. Right? You remember that reaction? So that statement is a statement that people mocking Shaul deserve death. So the mockery of the king is an act of Moreid B'Malchus, of rebellion against the throne. But the best example is one we haven't seen yet. And that is going to be in Shmuel Bet chapter 10. Nachash of Ammon is going to die. He has a son named Hanun. When Hanun is sitting Shiva, so to speak, for his father, David sends his men to console Hanun. Why is David doing that? Nachash was not a friend of ours, so that's a discussion we'll have to get to, God willing, on the day we get to Shmuel Bet chapter 10. I think we have a couple years. But the point is that Hanun has this terrible reaction in which he humiliates them. He has half of their beards cut off. It's an act of scorn and mockery. And it causes David to go to war against Ammon. The idea that you mock the representatives of the king is an act of rejecting his reign and grounds for an attack. And then finally, Yehoash and Amatziah. Not quite a perfect example because it's already a war situation. But if you were to look there, we're not going to right now. It's in Malachim Bet, chapter 14. What happens is Amatziah, king of Yehuda, sends messengers to Yehoash, king of Israel, challenging him to war, essentially, saying, it's time for a battle. Yehoash, king of Israel, mocks Amatziah, saying that the thorn sent a message to the cedar, saying, let's get married. the he's like, you're beneath me. Go away. Stay in your lane. He basically says back to him. That kind of treatment, that kind of mockery, is a rejection of somebody's authority. And so that's what David sees with Nabal. Nabal is mocking him. It's more than just saying, I'm not going to support you. It's a challenge to his throne. Of course, if you're going to go with this explanation of David, you have a problem. This isn't the first person to reject David as king, if you consider that Ziph turned him over to Shaul. Right? Why doesn't David go to war against Ziph? Also, if you're really telling me this was a Beis Din proceeding, a court proceeding, the defendant has to be present. There have to be warnings. Like, there are witnesses. And you could argue maybe some of that doesn't quite need to appear here. But this doesn't look like a Beis Din proceeding, like a court proceeding. And of course, Abarbanel won't accept this approach at all, because Abarbanel said that Nabal was only mocking David's men, and not mocking David at all. So I want to offer you a second approach, which I think is important. It traces to a comment that Rav Bazak makes in Shmuel Beis, Perek Beis. The second chapter of Shmuel Bet that story there in Shmuel Bet is right after Shaul and Yehonatan were killed by the Plishtim, and the people of Yavesh Gilad bury the body. They endanger themselves in order to take care of the bodies of Shaul and Yehonatan. So David in Shmuel Bet chapter 2 rewards Yavesh Gilad for what they did on behalf of Shaul. And Rav Bazak there makes the point that this is consistent with David's approach to chesed. You know, we usually characterize David either in terms of his identity as a warrior or in terms of his identity as the author of Tehillim, right? This Bein Adam LaMakom, the relationship with God. However, David is also a person of chesed, a person of kindness. You know, remember, and now I'm going to be reading my notes off of my screen because I forgot to print out this page, so I won't be able to see people. Sorry. But remember that David is from Ruth, right? And remember that we say in Megillat Ruth, those of you who were in the class with me last year when we learned it, that it has a chesed focus, right? The book has a very strong emphasis on kindness. We had this whole thing in our introduction to Megillat Ruth, where we talked about the different purposes of the book. I gave you a link on the sheet in source number 4 for where you could hear more about that. That's my introductory class where I talked about it last year. So Rav Bazak notes that David's monarchy has in it numerous acts of chesed, numerous acts of kindness. He takes care of, and I gave you bullet points on the sheet, he takes care of Yavesh Gilad because they were good to Shaul. He employs chesed to help Mephibosheth, son of Yehonatan, because of the relationship with Yehonatan, he's now going to help Mephibosheth. He, as we just mentioned, comforts the son of Nachash, king of Ammon. He rewards Barzillai HaGiladi for his kindness to David. And of course here, he is repelled by Nabal. To David, chesed is very, very important. And even though Nabal doesn't owe him a penny, legally, he owes him something morally. He should be helping. And the idea that somebody could simply reject out of hand his own obligations and be so harsh in doing so, it antagonizes David. Much like, if you remember what happens after David's, you know, call it what you want, sin with Bathsheba, right? Nathan comes to David. He wants to show David that what he did was wrong. So he invents a story. He tells him about the wealthy man and the pauper who are neighbors, and the wealthy man has everything and the pauper's got nothing, and the wealthy man has a visitor come and he wants to prepare a meal, and so he takes the one sheep belonging to the pauper and he shechts that and serves it, and he says to David, what should be done to this wealthy man? And David says, kill him. Put him to death. And you read that, you're like, wait, no. Whatever the penalty is for taking your neighbor's sheep, it's not a death penalty. Why did David jump to the death penalty? And the answer is, to my mind, because that's the way David looks at the world. In David's mind, of course you engage in chesed. Of course you help others. And to not do so is beyond the pale. The same thing he wants done to that wealthy man who didn't exist, but David didn't know that. David thought he was hearing a real din Torah. David thought that was a real person. The same thing he wants to do to that man, that's what he wants to do to Naval here. So to me, that's what this is about. I did bring you also source number 6, when the Givonim come to David, that's a story in its own right. David says there are 3 signs of the Jew. It's source number 6, the Gemara in Yevamos. Rachmanim, Baishanim, and Gomlei Chasadim. They have to be merciful, bashful, and generous. If you're not generous, he says, you're not Jewish. There's something wrong there with your lineage. He's willing to say such a person is not considered a Jew to begin with. So David's reaction here, maybe his reaction to Naval is based on just horror at how somebody could be so ugly in his conduct. It's not a legal judgment of Morid B'Malchus, a rebel against the throne. It's not even personal. It's not about him refusing David. He would have the same reaction if Naval refused anyone. That's what I see. You follow? Okay, questions and comments. Sandra.
When I started looking at the Shmuel, I noticed that it said Ka'arba Me'ot, it's a kid.
Yes.
Is there any significance that it's Ki'arba Me'ot and not Arba Me'ot?
Yeah, I haven't seen anyone give an answer other than to say it means 400 or approximately 400. I haven't seen anything further than that. No.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to see later on in the book the same 400-200 split. It looks like it was just the way he did his split of the army was roughly this way, 2/3, 1/3. Yeah, but no, I haven't seen anybody offer anything beyond that. Okay. Yes, Ruth. You're muted, Ruth.
Sorry.
Yeah.
David is not officially king until Shaul dies.
So, yes and no, right? This is something we keep going around and around on without any really good way to clarify it. He, by dint of his anointment by Shmuel, he was already king at that point. The problem is that so is Shaul, and that doesn't work. We have said multiple times something that supports what you're saying, that no, you can't have an overlap between monarchies, one king at a time. And that would seem to suggest that must mean that David is, you know, waiting at this stage. However, keep in mind that back in chapter 15, after the war with Amalek, Shmuel took the throne away from Shaul. Mind you, Shmuel continues to treat Shaul as king in some measure, and David certainly treats him as king in some measure, and the army thinks that he's still king, right? So it's not like it's fair to say at that moment Shaul lost the throne. Nonetheless, it seems fairly clear, especially because the language in the text was unisana, which you could legitimately read as God has given the throne. He's already given it. L'reacha tovi mecha. So David already is a king. It's a little hard to wrap your mind around, but it's true.
Yeah. But Shaul's punishment
No, that was his first punishment. He got two punishments. One was in chapter 13, because he brought the offerings without waiting for Shmuel, and that was when he lost it from his line. And then in chapter 15, he lost it from himself as well. It wasn't just that his kids wouldn't get it, but he himself would lose it. Two
but
different
in that
stages.
Case, David is entitled to act like a king.
Correct. Correct.
Carry out funding. Yeah.
Claudette.
Some time ago, we talked about why David did not kill Shaul when he had him in the cave, because he did not want to set a precedent of one killing a king. If David sees himself as an incoming king and acting as a king, I think that he had to act just so that it would not set a precedent where people feel they can't contribute. I like the idea of it being Hesed, because I really like David for that. But also, I think he didn't want people to think that they can go about denying the kingdom what they should be giving.
Right. No, I think there is definitely something to be said for that. I definitely hear. Janine?
I just wanted to say that for those that think that it was a based in, that's kind of carried out in the story of Bathsheba, where they also, they don't, Chazal say that, that Uriah was killed justly, was sent to the war to the front justly, because he didn't listen when the king told him, go to your house.
Right. Yeah, this
it's
is
the same thing. It's not explicit, I understand.
No, but this is, I think I mentioned it last time when we started this idea of Mori B'Malchus, this is consistent with an approach that sees based in every step of the way. The same thing with Yoav and Avner. That sees that, in Shmuel Beis as, and in Malachim. That was what we discussed it in the Tuesday class, as going on in a based in. Yes. There is such a thread, a common thread. Okay. So that's the Shmuel segment. Yes, Ricky.
After everything is said and done, or just said, I still think that it's a very harsh judgment on David, on David, to go into war and attack somebody just because he was not nice. It to me, it just doesn't feel right. You attack somebody who is a danger to you, or who is a danger to the country, but not because somebody dissed you.
So it's not about dissing him, and I think that's the point that we're trying to make here. Either one approach is, and this, goes back to what Claudette was just saying, that undermining the monarchy is itself a threat to the kingdom. Or the second approach, having wealthy people who are entirely selfish and not willing to engage in chesed is also a threat to the kingdom. We have a concept in halacha of extrajudicial punishment, that a beis din is able, certain batei din, not all courts, but certain level courts are able to carry out punishment when they believe that there is a overwhelming need on behalf of society. So for example, we say that in order to carry out capital punishment, somebody has to have committed the crime, having been warned, and there have to be witnesses who issued a formal warning and all of that. And the responsibility of the court is to try to undermine the case against the defendant and to try to support the defendant. V'itzilu ha'idas ha'rotzeach. They are responsible to try to save the fellow. However, if the feeling of the court is we have somebody out there who's a murderer and he's going to kill again if we don't put him away, they're going to do what they need to do in order to carry out justice. Even though it doesn't fit what the normal rules are. And what I'm arguing here is it has nothing to do with dissing David. What it has to do with is his feeling of, this can't pass. We can't have a society like this. And David is so sensitive on this issue of chesed, he's not willing to tolerate it. I recognize it's difficult, but I think that's consistent in particular with that story of David after Bathsheba and his reaction regarding the parable that he doesn't know is a parable. Diane, I didn't know if you were trying to raise your hand. Diane? No.
I also wanted to say, wouldn't there be an intermediate step?
Like what?
Well, I don't know, talking to him and...
He did talk to him. He didn't get anywhere. I mean, legitimately, you could say, well, confiscate his property, but that doesn't solve the problem. The killing him solves the problem. Then there are no more people who are like chesed. Now I recognize this is difficult, but I think it's an interesting way to read it that is consistent with what we see of David. So we're going to shift gears to Pesach now. So,